Welcome to the Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast. I'm your host, Brian Briscoe with Streamline Capital. Very excited for today's show. We've got Sean and Ryan Gaylor on with us. So guys, we'll just jump right into it. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thank you so much for having us today, Brian.
Thanks for having us, Brian.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for you guys who are listening, you know, Sean and Ryan came in on our last deal as partners. I am actually sitting about five blocks away from that property. I'm sure we'll eventually talk about it. So this one's going to be extra fun for me. Hope it's fun for everybody else. So guys, how about this? Let's start out with you telling us about yourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, my name is Sean Gaylor. You know, I actually grew up in Nebraska. Right outside of Offutt Air Force Base in Nebraska, grew up in a military town and really enjoyed my time out there. But I was always looking for something bigger. I was mesmerized by the big city of Chicago and moved there right after high school. I did a lot of my schooling in Illinois and then went up to Marquette for a few years and then was lucky enough to meet my husband after I started my career. So we still live in the Chicago area. We're just north of the city in Kenosha, Wisconsin, so halfway between Chicago and Milwaukee. And I started my career actually in meeting and event planning. So I used to plan conferences like the one you're attending now for up to about 13,000 people. That was our annual conference that we planned. So that included all of the logistical aspects of guaranteeing hotel rooms, making sure travel arrangements were made. Do we have enough meeting space? Who are going to be the speakers at this conference? How do we attract people to come to this conference? What does the marketing look like? So every aspect, I was kind of running all of those moving parts of meetings. And it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of travel. It gave me the chance to travel all through Europe and do a bunch of different meetings over there as well. But ultimately, my real goal in life, again, growing up in a military community, law enforcement and government was always kind of in my heart. And I had the opportunity to become a police officer in one of our local communities here in Illinois. And I went for it and got the job. And I've been a police officer now for 10 years. And I absolutely love what I do. I get to work with the community and get to work with different government officials and trying to connect residents with the government to provide the best situation possible within the community. And that's everything from housing to legal justice. So really enjoy what I do there. But in my spare time, my husband and I started getting into real estate about 10 years ago. And it's another passion of mine. I absolutely love it. And we can kind of get into that story a little bit more once you introduce yourself.
I was going to say the same thing. Let's have Ryan introduce himself, and then we'll get into that part of the story. So that sounds fascinating. Ryan, go ahead, man.
All right. I'm Ryan Gaylor, and my story begins. I've kind of been in this area my whole life. Like Sean said, we live in southeastern Wisconsin now, but I grew up in the furthest most suburb of Chicago, right up in Lake County, right on the border of Wisconsin, right along the lake. And I lived there pretty much my whole life until we moved over the border to save on taxes when we bought our own house, because they're a lot cheaper than they are in Illinois, for anyone that knows about Illinois taxes. My story is pretty simple. I've always been into cars and automotive and racing. I've always been interested in how things work, taking things apart, putting them back together.
Okay. I've always you're into cars, I've got to ask the question. Okay. Any car in the world you could own, what would it be?
Oh, that's a tough one. It changes for me a lot, but
okay.
A lot of people would say a Lamborghini or something like that, but mine would probably be more like an Aston Martin or something like that.
There's like a variety. I probably have right outside the hotel today. I'm at the Best Ever conference right now. There, the hotel's the Hyatt. I'm at the Marriott across the street, and walking across the street, there's a Lambo right out there right now. So yeah, pretty car, nice. Pretty car. So.
I definitely wouldn't turn it down, but I don't know if that's my overall dream car.
So Aston Martin. All right. Got it. I like that. I like that. A little bit different. Not quite as flashy. So, all right. Got it. Go on. You've always been into racing, always been into automotives, you know.
Always been into cars and automotive and racing. My grandpa was a mechanic. So when he was out there working on cars in his garage, I was always right there holding the flashlight and handing him tools and just always wanted to be around it. So that's been my story pretty much since I got out of high school. I started working on cars at small independent shops and worked my way up. Now I work for a Chrysler Dodge Jeep dealership up here in southeastern Wisconsin, and it's been my whole life pretty much. I've always had kind of an interest, like Sean said, in side projects like real estate or something like that. I've always had little interest in pursuing that avenue as well to see if there was anything interesting going on there. So like she said, when we met, that's kind of where our story starts together. We were planning on getting a house together. So she had her own house at the time, and I had an idea that I wanted to try to rent it out, but she had saved up her money and it was her first house and she had decorated everything exactly how she wanted it. So it was kind of a little scary for me to bring up the idea to her.
And for the record, we had never talked about real estate prior to that. I had always had an interest, but it was never really a conversation that we got into until he approached me one day and said, "Hey, what do you think about putting your house up for rent and see if we can find a tenant to live in this property and we keep it for a few years just to see how it goes?"
Because I knew it was always something that I had an interest in, but we, like she said, had never really talked about it together. So for me to bring this up, this idea that she, you know, why don't we just give away your house to the highest bidder?
How did that go over with you?
I thought it was a great idea because, again, I'd already had an interest in real estate. And I said, I didn't even think twice. Absolutely. Let's do it. Let's find a great tenant to live in this property, give us some passive income while we go start our life together. And it really worked out well. We got very lucky with the property, had some fantastic tenants over the years. And that's really what propelled us into getting more rental properties.
Awesome. I remember approaching my wife with a similar idea and I struck out, but I totally struck out. You know, I love the idea, you know, you can buy a fourplex on a single family loan, right? And you can use the income from the rest of the fourplex, you know, live in one unit and rent out the other three and almost live rent free. And I pitched that idea to my wife and completely struck out. Her answer was, "Brian, we have five kids. Where are we going to find a fourplex that has like a four bed, you know?" And I was just like, "Okay, you're right, you know," but anyway, much different scenario. But yeah, every once in a while I speak without thinking. And that was one of the cases, but great idea. Anyway, so you can put yours up for rent.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I brought up the idea and she, like she said, she was into it. So we kind of just started that whole process. We had a lawyer draft up a lease and
Yeah, once we got the tenant in there, I think we realized, wow, there is a lot of potential to have some really good passive income coming in as a secondary way of income for us to live our lives. So we started to look for that next property and the next property, and we wanted to keep building that passive income for ourselves. And then we got into the point of, well, why don't we flip a house? Let's try buying a house and flipping it. So we did that a few times as well. Again, very successful opportunities for us, and we really loved it. But when you're working a 9-to-5 job, so you're doing your 8 and in my case, 12 hour days. You go to the flip house, you do the work on the flip house for another 5 to 8 hours. You sleep a couple hours because you're young at the time and you can still do it. And you go back to work and you start the cycle over again. And at the time it was a lot of work, but we loved what we were doing. And when you realize that you love doing the flip side of it, maybe a little bit more than the 9-to-5 job, you really start to see your passion kind of break away. And the next thing you want to do is just, okay, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? Yeah. And we wanted to expand, but that's where we kind of ran into some hiccups.
I think when you work an 8-hour day or W-2 job, and then you actually look forward to going to the flip that night and working another 8 hours, that kind of realize your passion maybe is shifting more towards the real estate.
I would say that I enjoyed, you know, serving in the military for 18 years. All right. It was the last three that I got into multifamily and the last two where I was itching to get away from work. And that's, it was the same thing. It's just like, not that I didn't enjoy it. It's just that I found something that I enjoyed a lot better. And all of a sudden it was just like, this is it, you know, that's me.
Yeah. I feel the same way every day. I really enjoy the work that I do for our local community. But at the end of the day, I'd really like to be talking to more people about real estate and how they can get started in real estate. And hopefully they feel that excitement and passion that we have for it and can benefit from it as well. But ultimately, like I said, we had struggles expanding our business and getting more rentals. And when the lenders are saying, why don't you slow down a little bit? It's kind of heart-wrenching because that's the last thing we wanted to do. So
Ryan, we want to speed up. Why are you telling us to slow down? Yeah, exactly. Right.
And then Ryan approached me one day with a crazy idea, and I'll let him tell that story.
Another crazy idea.
But maybe I'm the crazy one because I keep accepting ideas.
Like she said, the lender was kind of telling us we need to slow down, pay off some debt and get things in order. And like, we're trying to scale at that point and, you know, get as many units as we can and kind of grow as fast as we can. So once we realized that really wasn't the avenue to take through single family, I started podcasts and researching multifamily a little bit. And I looked into it for about 6 months and just listening to different Bigger Pockets podcasts, things like that, just trying to learn. There's a different avenue we could kind of take to scale a little faster than what we were doing. And then I approached her one day. I said, why don't we just buy more units at once? Like one of these bigger buildings.
Like an apartment. That is a crazy idea, man.
Yeah. Well, in my mind, I'm like, great. My husband is a multimillionaire and I didn't know it. And this is awesome. But yeah. Obviously that's not the case. There was a bigger story behind that of how we would go about that process. And it became a thing for me to fully understand that process. I need to realize what I'm getting into and what kind of complications could be ahead for us and what that means for us and how to financially achieve that goal. So we started to get our education and meet with other multifamily owners to figure out how they were doing it and what their story was. And once we realized the process of doing a syndication type deal, it all made sense. And we were both feet in, jumped all in and went for it.
She levels me out because I was just going to jump in before the education.
But. You know, that works really well with a partnership. You know, my wife had a lot of concerns and I mean, she wasn't ever a no. It was just, I think you kind of need that because a lot of things that my wife pointed out to me were, you know, what if, what if, what if, what if. You know, and there's a lot of good concerns there, but I think it's important to, you know, number one, in a marriage to make sure that you're both on the same page, but at the same time, you know, jumping in with both feet is the best way to learn, but there's hard lessons, you know? So if you ask a couple of questions before you jump in, you know, maybe you avoid a couple hard lessons, but all right. So take us from there. You decided to do this thing, you podcast, syndicate. I'm sure the next day you had a property under contract and raised $10 million for it, right?
Absolutely.
All right. So if that's not how it went, tell us how it really worked.
From there, we got educated and we, after going through that, we kind of got our first steps of what we needed to do and who we needed to talk to. And we got plugged into a bunch of different networks and we just basically went out and started meeting people and people that were already in the business doing it.
Underwriting deals, talking with brokers, figuring out what cities made the most sense for us to potentially purchase in because there were guidelines that we wanted to stick with and try to find those emerging type markets. Mm-hmm. And Ryan spent many hours underwriting. And I think for every 100 time he would underwrite, maybe we would find one that would meet the matrix of what we were looking for.
That's the hard part, you know, is I think when you're first starting out, though, I mean, the first 20 or 30 are throwaway deals, you know, because for me anyway, maybe you guys were faster than me, but the first 20, I didn't even know what I was doing with the underwriting, you know? And so, you know, it almost takes 100 to learn how to underwrite, you know, decent enough to actually get one. But still, I mean, most people who are in this profession are underwriting, you know, 50, 80, 100 deals before they get one under contract. So yeah, good practice. Lots of reps and sets, as I like to call it. You're getting the reps in. So yep. About the first deal, what was the one we partnered on your first? I don't remember.
No, that was actually our second deal. So we went through the whole underwriting process, got very close on best and final on a few times on the properties that we had submitted LOIs on, but never quite got to that final step of you've been awarded the property. And we had been doing multifamily at this point about a year.
A little less than a year. Yeah.
And it very frustrating because you think immediately when you get in, I'm going to find a property. This is going to be great. And we're just going to get started and go forth and do great things. And we were reaching that year point and getting frustrated and discouraged. And I think that's really when we had to pivot what our goals were in this industry.
In our education program, they tell you to kind of find your niche, like where you fit in, what you're going to do, your roles. Mm-hmm. And neither one of us were good at investor relations, capital raising, talking to people, anything down that avenue. So we didn't really choose capital raising as one of our roles for either of us. So I was doing the underwriting. Sean was going to be the asset manager. And then we were just going to team up with other people in the industry to help us raise the money. But after we'd been in it for about a year, we kind of started to realize that, well, even when you bring a great deal, whoever you partner up with is going to want to know, you know, where's the money coming from? How are we going to close this thing? How are we going to raise money? So we kind of realized that, well, regardless if we find an outstanding deal, underwrite it, everything's perfect, got the asset manager, we're still going to need to raise money at some point. So can't avoid it.
Let's dive into that a little bit because you guys are both, you know, not in professions where you're probably around accredited investors every day. All right. So, you know, a police officer, car dealership, you know, how did you guys go about, you know, finding investors?
Yeah. And that's been the struggle, right? Because first of all, we're both very much introverts. Putting ourselves out there and trying to talk to people about this was step number one. Get out of the comfort zone and tell people what you're working on. Let them know that, you know, I'm now in the multifamily space and this is what it means. Absolutely. And just having those initial conversations with people maybe it doesn't click the first conversation, mm-hmm. but then I bring it up again. Now they ask a secondary question.
Yeah.
And you bring it up again, they start asking further questions. Those are where we kind of started to make the connections of, okay, they own rental properties, but now they're buying apartment complex. I need to find more about this. And how do I get involved in that? Yeah. So we started with those initial conversations, friends, families, acquaintances that we knew, just putting it out there. This is what we do. Mm-hmm. And then it started to expand a little bit more onto social networks, such as LinkedIn, Facebook. Those are the two that I typically spend a lot of my time on, connecting with people out there. And not just for the intent of, okay, I'm looking for an investor, looking for an investor, looking for an investor. It's more about finding people who are in the space or who have invested in other properties and finding out, how did you find the right property for you? What are you looking for? What have you learned in this space that has worked or has not worked for you? And just building those relationships with people. And it's usually the ones that you would least expect to be an investor on your deal are the ones that come through and say, hey, I'd love to invest with you.
Isn't that true? I mean, that was absolutely true with me. The people that I thought for sure would invest, you know, were like, yeah, that sounds good, but no thanks. My experience, and it sounds like you guys had something similar. Once you started posting what you're doing on LinkedIn or Facebook or whatever social media platform you want, I started finding people that I had connected with 5, 8, 10 years ago, crawling out of the woodworks saying, Brian, can I invest with you? And it's like, wow, haven't seen you in 10 years, but if you want to start with that question, the answer is yes. Let's catch up. You know? But so there's extra power to that social media, because you're not just reaching people that you currently know, you're reaching people that, you know, you might not have had contact with in several years. So
exactly. And, you know, we still utilize social media quite a bit today. And when we first got into the industry, it was right after COVID. Conferences were very, very rare. You didn't see a lot of in-person conferences taking place. So we were forced to go to social media to make those connections with people that we did and did not know. But over the past couple of years, it's starting to transition a little bit more, going to in-person conferences and just meeting new people. Mm-hmm. And every time we go to a conference, we're building that network of people that we're meeting and continually having those conversations with them to continue to hopefully build that investor database.
Awesome. 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 So let's fast forward real quick. First deal you guys were in, how did you guys get into it, you know, and walk us through that one?
That one was actually a relationship that our other partner on our team, Ben Bozer, he was starting to build a relationship with some guys through LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And they had just closed on a property and they were needed to backfill a little bit to get it fully across the finish line, CapEx, budget, a little bit of that stuff. And he had been building a relationship with these guys, and they approached him and said, hey, we're looking for some extra funding. You know, do you guys think you could come in on the deal and help us out with that? So we kind of raised a small portion on that deal and helped them get the CapEx funded for that. And then,
And I think that was a big challenging point for us, because at this point we had not raised on a deal yet, mm-hmm. and we didn't know what we could bring to the table. But it was a good challenge for us to go in and say, okay, let's do this and see what we can bring to the table. And if we have the capability to actually raise some funds for this great opportunity. And luckily we were able to bring in a significant amount, surprisingly more than we thought we would for that deal. And it gave us that confidence that yes, we can do this. And now we can move forward from here knowing that hopefully it only gets better.
Yeah, something we kind of needed to prove to ourselves, because like I said, neither one of us, that is not the role we chose. So we kind of jumped on the deal to prove to ourselves, okay, you know, we can raise capital. This is something that we can do. We got to get outside our comfort zone a little bit and try it and see how it goes. So that's
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, great job for jumping out of your comfort zone. Capital raising is right now the name of the game. You know, people who can bring in money, can get into whatever deal that they want, you know, and that's the thing we're looking for. I mean, I'm looking for people who can raise capital too. You know, I want to get much bigger deals, the amount of money that I can raise. And when you start looking at the easiest way to get into this business, raising money is probably it. If you can raise money, you can essentially go wherever you want to go, invest wherever you want to invest and make it work. But yeah, so good job going out of your comfort zone, getting into that one. And, you'll be much, much better off for it, you know, every successive time you get into a deal. All right. So came in after the fact, probably some challenges to that. Backfilling's not never as easy as front filling, I guess. But what were some of your biggest challenges and biggest lessons learned on that?
I think for me, it was our first deal that we were a part of. And it was, you know, obviously memorizing all of the deal numbers and how the deal was going to be presented to investors and sounding confident in that. So one, I'm already an introvert. Two, I'm trying to sell something or at least provide an opportunity to other people that I think I understand what I'm doing here. But it was our first one. So when you start to get those questions of, well, what else have you done? What other properties have you been a part of? It's making them feel comfortable to trust you to go in on this opportunity with you as your first one was some of the biggest challenges that I faced, was building that trust with them to say, we can do this. We've got this. We've got a great team. This is the experience behind the opportunity that we know that we're in good hands. And for me, that was the biggest challenge.
I would say the biggest challenge is, yeah, like not feeling like you belong there, trying to get these people to believe that you know what you're doing. And that the fact that we had real estate experience, we flipped houses, we'd done rentals for 8 years at that point. So people knew we were doing real estate. So we kind of had that in our corner. It's a big jump from what we were doing. So yeah. To get people to say, you know, like, I've never heard of this, because a lot of people have never really even heard of the syndication model. I mean, it's not something that's shouting from the rooftops all over the place and everyone knows what it is. So you have to explain what it is you're doing, mm-hmm. and then, you know, offer this opportunity to them, try to get them to say yes. It's a lot of explaining. And like Sean said, when you're new, it can be difficult sometimes to get people to just understand what it is you're even telling them or presenting to them.
The other thing is, we would also get the question, well, are you investing in this property? And the answer for us, we wanted to say yes to that question. So we became passive investors as well as part of the GP team on the property, just so that we were part of this venture with them. You know, we're all in. And if you're willing to come in and join us, we're a part of this with you. And that helped build that trust with them also.
I feel like it changes things a lot when you can say, yeah, like it's tough to tell someone that they should jump on this opportunity. And then when they ask you if you're jumping on it, no, I'm not. Do it, but you should. I'm not doing it, but great for you.
I did the same thing. You know, the first couple of properties that we syndicated, and when I say couple, I really mean two, because I passively invested in the first two properties I syndicated, and then I ran out of money. You know, I didn't start with a gigantic, you know, fund of money. I had sold one of my single family homes, and I had about $100K to deal with. You know, that was it. You know, but which at the time was, you know, probably the most I've ever had in a bank account at one time. But, you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, when you put money in and you're investing alongside your investors, you have a little more credibility, you got skin in the game. It is a little bit easier to get investors if you're doing it yourself. It's not that you can't do it without money in the game, but, you know, it's a lot easier to do it. And I'll just tell you how it worked for me. We're doing property number 19 and 20 right now. You know, I think I passively invested in the first two, and then I probably skipped eight. You know, there are eight different investments that I wish I could have. And then since then, you know, we started selling properties and, you know, a lot more money coming in. Since then, I've been able to do almost every single one, which is super nice. But it's one of those things where there's a lot of potential in the future, but the more money you're able to put into these deals, the more credibility you get with investors, and the more you make on the back end as well. But not everybody has that capability starting out. But anyway, all right. So let's move on. Next deal, and we won't talk a whole lot of details on it as far as the deal itself, but how did you approach the second one differently after doing the first one?
Do you want to take that one?
Do you want me to take that one?
Sure. There were some changes for sure, but we'll let Ryan kind of get into that.
There were some changes for sure. That one we got in while it was still an active deal. We hadn't closed on it yet, so that was one of the major things we got in from the beginning. And that one again was through a relationship Ben had built with you on LinkedIn. You were the sponsor on that one. Mm-hmm. And he had been talking with you a lot, I know, on LinkedIn and building that relationship. And that we needed to prove to ourselves, I think, again, that we could bring more money than what we wanted or what we previously had brought. We always try to up our goal, obviously, every deal we do.
Yeah. And I think too, for us, we wanted to work with somebody that we knew more than just conversations through LinkedIn. You know, I had become a member of your tribe and had been learning from you for several months prior to actually meeting you in person. We had the opportunity to meet at a conference and
Orlando.
Sit down.
Yep. Just a few years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. And just sitting with you and talking with you, you get to, I feel, face to face, you can really get a feel for somebody's personality, who they are, and Are you getting into business with somebody that you can trust? And ultimately, we felt after our conversation with you that it was a very good partnership should something come along for us to partner with you on. And when you mentioned that you were looking into the Salt Lake City area, we were excited about that just based on all the great things happening in Salt Lake. We had been reading about cities out west that were really growing in population and job growth and just really hitting our radar. So it was the sweet spot. It was Brian Briscoe, and he's in Salt Lake City, and he's got this fantastic opportunity. We knew that we needed to at least hear more details and see if there was a way that we could be a part of this deal.
You know, and man, I love Salt Lake. I mean, it helps that I grew up here, you know, but just 2 days ago, Wall Street Journal, you know, in their economic section, it was like one of the top articles, you know, hottest job market in the country, Salt Lake City, you know, and just, yeah. Anyway, I love Salt Lake. Anyway, talk about
it. Well, we love it too. And not only that, our investors love it. And that was the other part of it. Because even before we agreed to do the deal and help raise capital on that deal in Salt Lake City, we were putting the buzzwords out to our investors to say, hey, what do you guys think of Salt Lake? I know it's not Chicago and it's close to home, but here's what we love about Salt Lake. Have you heard anything about it? And they had already heard about it. So Salt Lake was a big interest for our investors.
I noticed Ben's doing a lot of social media posts on Salt Lake as well. You know, he's really active at pushing Salt Lake as well, which I think is smart. If you know you're going to be doing a deal in Salt Lake, and oh, by the way, there are 506B syndications, so you can't talk about the deal. You can talk about the market all day long, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's what I try to do, is get people excited about Salt Lake. And here's one thing that posting about Salt Lake all the time has done for me, and kind of a lesson for anybody who's trying to focus on a single metro. I'm at the Best Ever conference right now. Well, I'm in a hotel room across from the conference right now, but you know, who cares? Walking into the conference, somebody walked up to me and I'd known them for quite a while. I said, so how's it going, Mr. Salt Lake City? And I've had several people walk up to me just from what I've posted on LinkedIn, say something similar to, so you're Mr. Salt Lake now, huh? And so when you start posting about multifamily, people are going to start looking at you as multifamily. So you start posting about Salt Lake City and multifamily, people start looking at you as Salt Lake City multifamily guy. And it doesn't matter, as long as you're consistent in your posting, consistent in your messaging, you are going to build that own brand around you. And you know, speaking more to the listeners right now than Ryan and Sean, but you're going to build that brand around you and people are going to recognize that. And that's when raising money becomes a little bit easier. If I'm personally known as, you know, Mr. Salt Lake City, which I'm not branding myself as, and Mr. Salt Lake City apartment guy, when I put a deal in front of them, they're going to understand that. And same thing for you guys. You've done the same thing. You started branding, which is very smart, you know, float. Hey, this is the city. This is the things that are going on. These are the dynamics. And that way, 2, 3, 4 weeks or 4 months later, when you put a deal in front of them, they're already conditioned on it. You know, it's like, okay, we've heard you guys say all the great things about X, whether it's Salt Lake City, multifamily, different city, different asset class, they're going to be much more likely to invest. So anyway, that's marketing for you. Marketing, but
100% agree. And you know, our partner Ben, you mentioned that he does a lot about Salt Lake. You know, he was a collegiate athlete playing baseball, so the interest for him to have in the ballpark baseball being built out there is huge. He loves to talk about it, so I know he shared that a lot.
I didn't know that about him until he started posting a lot about baseball. You know, because Salt Lake City is trying to get Major League Baseball out here. They're trying to get National Hockey League to put a team out here. You know, so there's a lot of buzz around that in the city. And I started seeing him post about baseball in Salt Lake, you know, and that's when I found out that he did have that baseball background. I didn't know that about him before that. But yeah. So we've talked a long time, so we need to start wrapping it up before, you know, listeners start tuning out. They're not going to tune us out. Never. But we still need to start wrapping it up. But a couple of questions to end things. First of all, what's next for you guys?
We got to keep the ball rolling. Our investors are still very interested in Salt Lake City. So we'd like to focus on Salt Lake a little bit longer and hopefully get our investors into a great opportunity in Salt Lake here in the very near future.
I know somebody that can help you with those opportunities. Yeah. Ryan, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say that we've kind of reached the point where we've had people approach us now where they're asking us if we have anything else coming online. A couple of people that have invested with us in the past, they actually approached us and said, you guys got anything else coming up or anything else coming up here, coming up there? We're looking to invest a little more or somewhere else. So
yeah, that is awesome. When you get that point where people are asking you for deals, you know, that's a nice turning point, you know? So it's kind of like that first indication that you've made that first step, you know, you've made up that first step, and there's lots more to come, you know, but awesome. So more Salt Lake City, more multifamily, and hopefully, you know, more deals with Brian Briscoe is what I'm secretly hoping. But all right, next question. What advice would you give somebody who is roughly 12 months behind you?
I would have to say vet your partners. Vet mm-hmm. who you're going to work with. There's a lot of opportunities out there. LinkedIn is a fantastic platform to meet people, and you very quickly learn who has opportunities available and who's looking for capital raisers. I think in our experience, we were excited to just get into our first deal. And because of that, we kind of jumped in on an opportunity to raise capital for a deal. And we're glad that we did it. But at the same time, I wish that we would have spent a little bit more time meeting with other operators to determine what would have been the best fit for us. Yeah. Not that other deal was bad. It was just now that we've worked with you and we've worked with other people, we realize where there's a good fit and where we feel there's a great connection as far as being successful operators. Yeah. So that's one of the major things I would suggest.
Yeah, I would just add to that, take your time. I feel like a lot of people, I felt this way when we first started, we got out and it was almost like a race to see how many units can you get, who can be the quickest to close the deal. But you people with 50 units, can we make it way more money than someone who's got 500? Like it's all about what deals you choose, what deals you're in, the operators you're working with. So my advice, I guess, to anyone just starting out or 12 months behind would be, like Sean said, vet your partners. It's not a race. Just because someone got into a deal in 6 months, just starting out, and it took you 2 years, your deal could be 10 times better than theirs, and they could be in a sticky situation now, and you could be on easy street. So just take your time, do what feels right, work with people you vet and trust, and it'll happen when it's supposed to happen. Just don't rush into anything, because you could be worse off. It's not a race. Run your own race and do it your way.
I had a boss that used to say, don't rush to failure. And I think there needs to be a healthy balance. I think you said it very well. You know, you need to be active and pushing and trying to get into the deals, but at the same time, don't go so fast that, you know, you put yourself in a bad position or a bad deal. So that's what I took from what you were saying. So,
yeah, exactly.
All right. Awesome. Now, last question. How can listeners learn more about you?
Well, we're certainly out on social media. I know we talked about it quite a bit today. I'm present on LinkedIn. It's under Sean Gaylor. Please hit me up and connect. I'm also on Facebook. It's Sean Tory Gaylor, which is the T in our GT Capital Management, Gaylor and Tory.
I did not know that.
That's my maiden name. So yeah, that's
I assumed Tory was your maiden name, but I didn't put that together with GT. So I mean, Ryan's a car nerd, so GT goes right along with that.
That's why it all fits.
That's why it all fits.
It knows a little bit about our personalities as well as, you know, it takes our names.
When we talked about it, I was like, well, GT is always associated with cars, so that works for me too. So both.
Yeah.
Fits both for me.
All right. Ryan, anything to add? I guess
with me, I'm more Facebook and LinkedIn, basically both. Ryan Gaylor on both LinkedIn and Facebook. And then our website, if you want to go there, gtcapitalmanagement.com.
Awesome. Awesome.
Learn all about us.
So we'll make sure all of that stuff hits the show notes. Thanks so much for coming on this show today. And don't wait to buy real estate. Buy real estate and wait. It still doesn't feel right yet. So maybe I need to, I don't know. Anyway, see you guys later. Have a great day.